Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry. By the way, I can tell that we had our office meeting today because I almost said TriStar Media. I know, TriStar Moving.
Media on the brain.
Media on the brain.
Yep.
So Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, and I love Chris to death. I think he says some crazy stuff sometimes.
Yes, he does.
And I think my favorite thing about it is that, I mean, Chris Sanders has been one of the nicest guys in town for 20 years. I mean, I remember when he used to go on Channel 4 after the games every night on Sunday, and Rudy Kalis would bring him in, and it'd be like, all right, Chris, what did we think of, you know, this game today on Sports Sunday, whatever. And I mean, I wanted to hear what Chris Sanders had to say. And I will never forget, like, my first, and I've told Chris this, my first week, maybe, or first month on the job, I said to Floyd, I go, hey, and I don't even really know Floyd at this point. And I said, hey, who's somebody that I can bring on the air that would be, you know, a former Titan that would be good to have on the radio that, you know, people would, and he goes, Chris Sanders, you know, just right away. And we start having Chris on every week, and I had a great relationship with Chris, and I think anybody who knows Chris has a great relationship with Chris. But, I mean, I really was like, man, this guy, he's the nicest guy I've ever met. I remember one time we got a bunch of information back, and, you know, Ryan was showing, you know, this segment you guys do is this popular, and this segment, you, and then the Chris Sanders segment is... And
the
I remember,
people love Chris Sanders.
I remember telling Floyd that, like, you know, the Chris Sanders segment was, and this was, you know, years ago, whatever. And I was like, it's like the highest, you know, most biggest that we, and he goes, people love him. Chris loves the Titans. Chris felt very confident they were going to beat the Bills. I thought, Chris, come on now. They beat the Bills. Chris said on Sunday, they're going to be the Chiefs. Mark Howard went 37-27. I went 38-28. Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Chris picked the Titans. So I'm thinking, man, Chris is just riding high right now. Said today he's nervous about the Colts. Said today he doesn't know who he's going to pick between the Titans and the Colts. And I think that's pretty eye-opening coming from a guy whose glass is always half full in Chris Sanders.
Especially when it comes to the Titans.
Especially when it comes to the Titans. So what do we make of that? Is there a sense, given the spot that Indianapolis is in, where we've gone over the math, if Indianapolis loses this game, the chances of them winning the division are minute, minuscule. Do we think that this game may be harder, given what's on the line, given that it's on the road, given that it's a Colt team that has given the Titans historically in the past a lot of problems? Do we think this may be a harder game Sunday than the two that they just played? Even though going into those games, we looked at those opponents with wide eyes like, oh my goodness, it's the Bills. Oh my goodness, it's the Chiefs.
Well, it depends on how much stock you put in home field advantage. I do think that it plays a factor, being at home, not having to travel, having your home fans there, being comfortable in your environment. I don't think it should play that much of a factor here, because it's not like the Titans are flying out to L.A. to play the Rams team that they may play once every 5-6 years.
Sure.
You know, Indianapolis is a place that they are used to going.
It's like a 45-minute flight.
Right. Like, it's not like it's some cross-country, super difficult, first time a lot of guys have played here type of environment. So I, you know, of course you're going to play that into factor, but I don't think that's going to play a huge factor here. For me, the thing that I'm most concerned about is the fact that I just know that the Titans do things that you don't expect them to do. Like beating the Bills on Monday Night Football. That should be a football team that you are like, okay, we feel confident about this team, about this Indianapolis Colts team that doesn't really seem to be that great, a team that has a quarterback that neither of us are very high on. Really, the only threat that I see that Indianapolis poses is potentially Jonathan Taylor. Ian and I were talking about that earlier. I'm most worried about Jonathan Taylor potentially going off. But it doesn't feel like anything that the Titans can't overcome, because they have Jonathan Taylor. Well, guess what? The Titans have the best running back in the league in Derrick Henry. Maybe the best player in the league in Derrick Henry. So it's all illogical to me right now. But I, for some reason, I just have a weird feeling. I have a weird feeling that I don't know if this Titans team can win 3 games in a row.
So I think they can. I mean, this is...
They can. I just don't think they will.
I'm going to say this. It was a big point in 2019. You know, the way that that all evolved from... We all know 2-4 through the first 6 games to the AFC Championship game. Like, it's very easy. You know, it's like they were over here and then they were over there. And a lot of people are doing that right now with the Braves. Like, they're looking at the Braves and they were like, they were under 500. Ronald Acuna got hurt. Mm-hmm. Now they're in the World Series. Well, a lot of this has to do, too, when they, right after the trade deadline, they went through like a 3-week stretch where they played the Nationals, the Orioles, and some other team who stunk.
Mm-hmm.
And they swept them, the Marlins. And they played like 3 weeks of just those teams. And I think they lost one game, maybe. And all those teams are terrible. And they just crushed them. And they kind of came out on the other side. The 2019 Titans, they went through a period where they made the quarterback switch to Tannehill. And they beat the Chargers. They beat the Buccaneers. And you were thinking, okay, like now this is a different team than it was before. They beat the Chiefs. They got embarrassed by Carolina. We all thought, okay, year's over. They beat the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started to get our hopes up. Then they played a big game against Houston, lost to Houston and the Saints. And they didn't really totally look that way. But before Thanksgiving, they were in that middle tier of the AFC, like the outside looking in. They were nowhere near the top. They were where I would put the Patriots right now, where I'd put the Steelers right now, where I'd put the Colts right now, where I'd put the Raiders right now. They were in that kind of period. And they had, I believe, at the Colts, at the Raiders, and Jacksonville all in a row. And it was like, can they get past these teams? And they went to the Raiders and they won. Like, they won in Oakland, and they're not good traveling out west. And Oakland was on kind of par with them at that time. And they crushed Oakland. They played Indianapolis, and it was like, hey, they never go to Indianapolis and have success. And Indy had some injuries, and then the Titans won that game, blocked a kick, hit Khalif Raymond for a bomb, took advantage of some injuries the Colts had. They won that game. And it was kind of like, whoa, these are games that normally the Titans screw one up between now and then. And that's where they really stacked their wins and got into that game with the Texans where it was essentially for the division. And I look at this and I'm like, you know, we felt at that time 2 years ago that those were two proven games for the Titans, that they probably should win, but we knew in the back of our minds, like, this is the same team that went to Carolina and just got housed. And they did the job then. So I do wonder if there's like a mental threshold with us and the Titans mm-hmm. that if they win this game, because we've talked about it, if they win this game, they win the division. And if they win the division, now we're talking about the top of the AFC and meaning it every week. And that's probably the difference here. I don't know. It's crazy. Let's go to your phones. 615-737-1025 phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ralph, kick us off this hour on the Colts. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Ralph.
Hey, Jared. Okay, this game I think is for Indies like a playoff game. But for the Titans, this is the best time to get back with Indy for what they've done for you for the past 20 years.
Sure.
Specifically 3 years ago when they got hot, then Mariota get injured and they lost that game. So this is the best time to get back with them and get them out of the way. And I have another thing for you, Jared. How you were high on the Jackrabbit foreseen from practice and all these things?
So, I appreciate the call. I'm not exactly sure what he said. I think he said, how am I high on Jackrabbit?
Yeah. Or maybe how high are you on Jackrabbit?
I mean, I think Jackrabbit's a lot like Malcolm Butler. Like, Malcolm Butler, the Titans signed, and Malcolm Butler is an aggressive corner. Like, that's what he always was. He wasn't the fastest guy. But he was a veteran corner that has had a lot of experience in the league, and he would gamble.
And he's healthy.
And he was very aggressive. And Malcolm Butler did that, and he gambled. He'd stare into the backfield, and he got beat for these touchdowns. And Titan fans lost their mind for the first, like, 6 weeks that Malcolm Butler was a Titan. Oh, my God, he's awful. Why did they do this? Why did they sign him? Why did they? This is why Belichick benched him. Oh, my God. Oh, my. And I just remember thinking to myself, and I mean, I was kind of like, dude, like Malcolm, I like Malcolm Butler. Like, what are you doing, Malcolm? But the more I watched Malcolm Butler, the more I was like, they just needed to tame that a little bit and say, okay, hey, this is how disciplined you have to play. But they didn't take that away from Butler, because if you take that away from him, then you're not going to get the big plays out of him. And ultimately, over a 3-year period, they got a lot of big plays out of Malcolm Butler. And I feel the same way about Jackrabbit Jenkins, which is that he's a veteran corner. He's very aggressive. And you're not going to like some of the things that are happening right now. But at the end of the day, he's a veteran corner, and he's going to make some veteran plays that are going to help you win some games. I mean, corner, unless you're a lockdown guy or unless you're Deion Sanders or you're intercepting every pass like Samari Roll did for the Titans one year, you really don't want to be known at corner. Like, you really want to go under the radar. I can't tell you how many good plays Jackrabbit Jenkins has. I know he's had some bad ones. He had a whiff on a tackle of Kelsey the other day that I was like, oh, goodness. But he's also not normally, like, corners normally don't tackle Travis Kelsey. So I just think we need to be a little patient with Jackrabbit. We need to understand that the good things maybe that he does, we don't totally see. But I would say, just like with Butler at that point, he's got to tighten it up a little bit. He's got to button it up. He's got to, you know, cut out the dumb stuff. But I'm not this, like, a lot. I think a lot of people hate Jackrabbit. Mm-hmm. I don't hate Jackrabbit. I mean,
I don't think that he's any sort of Pro Bowl caliber type of corner. But I do think that it has been nice this year to have kind of the consistency and the veteran presence of Jackrabbit, just because this is a pretty young group of corners. This is an injured group of corners, and he's been the most consistent corner throughout.
Sure. Let's get back to your phones next. 615-737-1025 plus some names that did not practice today. Oh, boy. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let me tell all the fine folks out there to join us in partnering with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and their families. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place on November 4th. Learn more at lightthenight.org/TN.
Coach, how nice is it to get a couple, few guys actually back at practice today? I know still on that IR, but just getting some healthy bodies out there.
Yeah, I mean, just to get those guys back into to meetings and get them back on the field, see where they're at from a football standpoint. And then as we work our way through the week, we can evaluate, you know, whether they think they can help us this week.
Jayon Brown, part of the designated to return group. Would you put Jayon Brown in the lineup if he returned?
Yeah, why not?
Because
you don't like him?
I'm not taking David Long Jr. out of the lineup.
You taking Rashawn Evans out of the lineup?
I don't know. I don't think against this team. I think...
Why not?
Because Brown is more of a pass, like a, you know, a defender against the pass.
And I think in every situation, Indy's going to want to run.
Right.
Fair.
Like, I'm going to want Rashawn Evans out there. David Long Jr. can do pass coverage stuff against this team, like Mo Alie-Cox.
Right.
But with Jonathan Taylor running the football, I think I want Rashawn Evans on the field. Now, I definitely want David Long Jr. on the field.
Oh, for sure.
David Long Jr. is a bad boy, and I want David Long Jr. on the football field. It should be noted, according to TD, no sign today at practice of A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Monty Rice, Roger Saffold, Bud Dupree, Tierre Tart, Amani Hooker, Chester Rogers, Chris Jackson. Taylor Lewan did practice today. So the guys who were hurt and did not play last week, who did not practice today, Hooker, Rogers, Jackson, Rice. The guys who did play but didn't practice today, Brown, Julio, Roger Saffold, Bud Dupree. Any concern on essentially A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Bud Dupree not practicing?
I see. Does it give a reason? It's just rest
so
or
eventually
hamstring?
In the next 10 minutes, the injury report will probably come out.
And
like
we'll see why.
But it's not like that's going to tell us. I mean, we already know, right?
Hamstring
for Julio.
Probably hamstring
for A.J.
Knee
for Bud Dupree. Everything for Roger Saffold. I mean, he's got everything.
I mean, he leaves every game with an injury.
Every game. And, like, this week it was
death,
early.
Death
was
taxes like, Roger Saffold leading the game.
It was like, Roger's down.
Yes. I mean, like, no, it really does not concern me. I mean, if A.J. and Julio, if this was, like, week three, week four, when they weren't practicing, when they weren't playing in games, then I would be a little bit more concerned. But until it gets to Thursday or Friday, I'm not going to put too much stake in who practiced today and who didn't. Because I kind of feel like today, A.J., Julio, Bud Dupree, guys who have been dealing with some nagging injuries, it's more of a rest day rather than a... Oh, no, let's monitor this hamstring injury.
ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Tonight, Nashville SC takes on Cincinnati. Pregame 6:15. The match begins at 6:30. What do we have in the text line?
Josh texts into the text line and says, it is something with the Titans that we just don't understand. We can have the much better team, but just decide to play awfully like when the Titans lost to the winless Colts.
So every time the Titans do something that drives you insane, like get embarrassed that week one against Arizona, which in hindsight... you know, the Titans didn't practice and they played Arizona. Like, that's going to happen. But it didn't feel that way then. Or when they lost to the Jets. For some reason, and I don't know why, it's Robbie Stanley's voice. Because I've been on the air now for 6 years here, and Robbie has been a daily host for like 1.5 of those. But I can just hear Robbie when something like that happens in my head, and I just hear him go, same old Titans. Just every time. I just hear it. Just every time.
Same old Titans.
Same old Titans. And I'm like, you know, like, and just that, I'll say S-O-T. And it's like, even though sometimes we think they're not, like, we're talking about the number one seed.
Mm-hmm.
There's still an element of same old Titans that I think everybody is waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, that's how we feel about the Titans. Like, you can never get you. Like, all year with the Atlanta Braves, right? I picked them to win the World Series before the start of the season. Then I watched them play for, like, the first 3 months. I'm like, uh-uh. Then I go to one game. Ronald Acuna tears his ACL. I'm like, done. See ya.
And then that's when they started to turn things around.
Well, then they make some trades, yeah. And I was against that because I was like, hey, you need to rebuild. You right. know, next year you'll have everybody back healthy. It'll be... And they knock off the Nationals and the Marlins and the bad teams. And I'm like, well, yeah, but when they play the good teams, like, and they got smoked by the Dodgers and smoked by the Yankees. And I'm like, yeah, like, you know. So they get to the playoffs. And I told my dad, I was like, hey, it'll be great if they win the division. And, like, that's great for them. But they're going to get crushed by the Brewers. Then they beat the Brewers in 4 games. Then I'm like, okay, maybe they got a shot against the Giants, but they're not going to beat the Dodgers. I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Did they beat the Dodgers? I mean, I am still waiting for the second shoe to drop in the World Series against the Astros because I know the Braves.
Same old Braves.
And the Titans, it's like I think Titan fans like me are waiting for that second shoe to drop. But I go back to the 2019 run where it was like, okay, they had some success with Tannehill. They were starting to win some games. You were starting to get excited, but you knew they had to go beat the Colts or they had to beat the Raiders, and you knew they probably weren't because something was going to get screwed up, and yet they did. Like, I'll say this right now. Take any Titan fandom out of it. Mm-hmm. Neutral observer.
Yeah.
Titans, Saints, and Nashville, who should win?
Titans.
Titans, Steelers, and Pittsburgh, who should win?
Titans.
Titans, Patriots, and New England, who should win?
See, that's tricky because the weather's coming into play. As a total neutral observer, I would probably lean Patriots just because I know that Ryan Tannehill can't play in the cold. But if, like, if this was totally neutral, neutral site, you know, 65-degree day, Titans.
Well, I'd say that the weather probably benefits you because you got Derrick Henry and they don't.
That's true.
So,
but also, small hands Tannehill can't really deal with the cold.
Yeah, but that's like deal with the cold when you have to play Brady in the cold. Or deal with the cold when you have to play Rodgers.
Whenever you have a really tough opponent in the cold. Yeah, it's not like Mac Jones is going to, you know, put your head in the dust.
I think as a neutral observer, I think Titans, Titans, Titans. This week in Indianapolis, neutral observer, Titans, Colts.
Titans.
I think Titans. But as a Titan fan, there's like this sense of the other shoe's going to fall.
They're going to mess something
up. At some point. Ian, don't you think they're going to mess one of those four up?
Which four? I'm sorry. Oh.
Saints, Patriots, Steelers, or Colts?
I mean, just pure percentages, yes, they will lose one of those.
It just feels like it's going to happen. But and I hope it doesn't, but it just feels like it's going to happen.
If it's a Saints game or a Steelers game, like, that's fine to me. I mean, obviously, it's not great, but if someone says, okay, here's 4 games the Titans are going to play, pick one for the Titans to lose, I would pick any of those games except the Colts game.
But if you really want to be great, like, not just win the division and get into the playoffs, but if you really want to be great, doesn't chasing after home field mean something? Because
yeah.
I don't think you can lose a Patriots game or a Steelers game and have a shot at getting the number one seed.
But do you think that they, not that they can, because I think we both know that they can win all 4 of those games. Do you think that they will?
No, I don't. You know what's crazy? If you beat the Colts and you start stacking wins like you probably should after the Rams game,
mm-hmm.
when the Bills play the Colts, you may be rooting for the Colts.
Yeah, probably.
What else we got on the text line?
Another texter texts into the text line and says it doesn't matter how bad the Colts won it. They don't have the personnel to beat the Titans unless the Titans play like garbage. I simply don't understand why their biggest investments and accomplishments is a guard and a middle linebacker. Totally unimportant positions. No receivers, DBs suck, and zero pass rush.
I mean, I will say this about the Colts. I think the Colts' best asset right now is that nobody is talking about is Pittman Jr. And I love Pittman Jr. I mean, I love him. I think he's a dog. I think he's just got an attitude to him, and he scares me this week.
But what can he do if Carson Wentz can't do it with him?
There's some truth. There is some truth to that. But I love Pittman. I mean, to sit there and say that, hey, their whole team is Leonard, Buckner, and Nelson, that's not totally fair. And I do think that, you know, Taylor, mm-hmm. Pittman, I mean, they've got some players now.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have a ton of players. And I would agree that if the Titans play their game, I don't think the personnel – I don't think the Colts can do what is required to beat the Titans, which is to take away Derrick Henry and take away A.J. Brown at the same time. And I think the Rams can. Like, I think the Rams have the defensive line with Aaron Donald and those tacklers and Jalen Ramsey to get put on A.J. Brown, that I think the Rams can do that. I'm not sure the Colts can. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. The Predators had a big win last night, but there was a bigger news item that I think we need to calmly discuss. You're thinking, what is he talking about? We'll do that next, right here on Stillman & Company. Hey, Preds fans, join us for Smashville Live tonight, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley and Chris Mason will talk with Preds defenseman Dante Fabro and Alexander Carrier. The show will air on Wednesdays throughout the hockey season from 6 to 7 with Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can watch the show via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. Be sure to join us this hockey season for Smashville Live. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yossi sweeps it on over. Now Gronlund turns on the right board. Comes back to the point. Fed to Yossi. More room left side. Out in front. The shot to score. Philip Forsberg finishes the play from the high slot. 2-0 Nashville.
I thought we played pretty well for 60. They're a pretty good team. They got a lot of skill. Obviously a lot of young guys that are coming up and making a difference for them. And I thought we stayed with it. We played hard defensively, especially around their net. I mean, they're shooting a lot for those tips and stuff like that. So I thought our net front's defense was good. And thought we could have scored a little bit. Yeah, a couple more. We had a lot of chances that we have to capitalize on, kind of put the game away. But, overall, a pretty good effort.
Philip Forsberg last night. Predators are balling 2 in a row. And I will say this. Duchesne's playing pretty well. Johansson's playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's early. We've seen them in spurts play pretty well.
Johansson had a great game against Minnesota.
Great game, 2 goals against mm-hmm. Minnesota. Saros is playing well in net. I mean, look, I know it's
Connor
early.
Connor Ingram had a great game.
I know it's early, and so I don't make one thing or another or whatever, but it was a nice win last night for the Predators. The Sharks have been hot starting the season. They got a nice win. I think that, two wins in a row, I like it.
Yeah.
I think Tomasino's been playing pretty well. I think Tolvanen has not been playing pretty well, but had an okay game last night. I mean, mm-hmm.
Kind of a spooky injury, too.
Yeah. But I do kind of feel, I kind of feel like this is what I expected for the Predators. And yesterday, there was a big headline in last night's game that the sellout streak of 192 games going all the way back, I believe, to like 2015, that the sellout streak is done. That they didn't sell all the tickets to the games. And Gentry Estes wrote a really interesting column in the Tennessean about this that I thought was pretty interesting, which was kind of, okay, now people are going to come up with their reasons as to why, and it's going to be about the vaccine mandate or the COVID tests, and that people are going to sit there and yell about it, and this is going to turn this argument of, see, your business is down and you, and, it's going to turn into that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I have a different opinion on this, of the sellout streak being over with the Predators. In life, sometimes it's really painful. You have to sacrifice things you really care about or things you take a lot of pride in to get yourself where you need to go. And it sucks whenever it is, whatever it is that you've got to do whatever you've got to sacrifice. It's tough. And I think this is the byproduct of the competitive rebuild that the Predators were talking about, which was they wanted to put out a fun, entertaining team on the ice that would win enough games to get people to buy tickets for them to be fully invested in this season and kind of keep it going and maybe make the playoffs, but develop the young guys at the same time and have a good team and get the wave of the future started. And that's lollipop land. That's fairy tale island. That's why when David Poile said competitive rebuild this summer, everybody was like, guffaw. Like, what does that mean? Because it's not realistic. So when they put the young guys out there this year, and I appreciated it, you know, that they were putting out there Cody Glass early or Novak or Tomasino. And I lost my mind when they put Tomasino on the bench. I want to see Tolvanen. I want to see Carrier and Fabbro. I don't need to see Ben Harper. I know he stinks. But when you do that, you're probably going to lose some games. Think about all the rookie quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Trevor Lawrence, losing. Zach Wilson before he got hurt, losing. Mac Jones, losing. Justin Fields, losing. Trey Lance before he got hurt, losing. You often don't win with a rookie quarterback in the NFL. Joe Burrow might be the MVP this year, but guess what he did last year? Lost.
Also got hurt.
But he was losing a lot, except for the Titans. Mm-hmm. He was losing a lot last year.
He was, yes.
But he lost. And that's what happens. That's the natural. But when you lose, people don't want to come like they did before. And I get it. This is not the President's Trophy team that also happens to be the defending Western Conference champions. Doesn't mean that they can't get hot through the year. Doesn't mean that these young guys can't be the next coming and that next year and the year after that, the year after that, they're a good team. All of that's possible. But this is what they needed to do. And I don't think it's one thing that led to the end of the sellout streak. I don't think it was the fact that the Predators last year had kind of a disappointing season until the very end and started this year off on a little bit of a disappointing early note. I don't think that's an accident. You know, I think that's part of it. Just like I think the vaccine mandate or the COVID test mandate, or that's because that's really what it is. I think that probably did turn off a percentage of the fans. I don't know what percentage, but I do think there are some people that are like, I'm not going to another game, and that actually meant it. Like, I'm sure that exists. So that's part of it. It's also a Tuesday night when the World Series is on, and not a local team, but a semi-local team is in it. So there's going to be a lot of interest. In fact, they almost share the same television channel. Like, a lot of people wanted to watch the World Series last night. I mean, I know this. I didn't go to the game last night. I wanted to watch the World Series, and that's no disrespect to the Predators. But I think ultimately, like, they really valued that streak. Like, they looked at the fact that in a non-traditional market, they could sell out almost 200 games in a row, and they could pack that building, and I know they did because I was there when it was packed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it's like they say, all good things come to an end. But I don't think this is like, I think there are people that are probably celebrating today that are like, hey, remember the vaccine stuff? Yeah, I said, it's all your fault because you put in the vaccine stuff and now you lose your sellout streak. Ha, ha, ha. I don't buy that. I think there's a lot of factors at play as to why last night's game didn't get sold out. 30 minutes pushed back on start time. Not a sexy opponent in the San Jose Sharks. It's a lot of things. And so I'm not upset that this streak was over. Now, I don't own the team, and thus it doesn't affect my bottom line if they sell all the tickets or don't sell all the tickets. But I ultimately think that this sellout streak is something that they probably needed to sacrifice in order to get the franchise back to where it needs to be. And the way they're going to get back to where they need to be is by investing in young players. And when you invest in young players, you will lose games. I have been a strong proponent for selling at each of the last two trade deadlines. That would have mean sending off Craig Smith and Mikhail Granlund in 2020. That would have meant sending off Mikhail Granlin last year and Eric Halla and Nick Cousins and Cali Yarncroke. And I would have sent all those guys off. And we would have lost games if that was my team, because we probably wouldn't have made the playoffs last year if Mikhail Granlin, if I had traded him. But I was okay with that. But you could tell they wanted to fill the building for the playoffs. They wanted to go to the playoffs, and they did. But I think ultimately, big picture for the fan base and for the franchise, that wasn't the right move. And I was very against it even when it happened. And you got all the texts and we got all the calls. No, Jared, we got to make the playoffs. Anything can happen. Anybody can beat anybody, and we've seen it. Okay. But I think ultimately, for you to get where you want to be, I'm not saying you got to tank. I'm not saying you got to get the number one pick and you got to draft the next Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid and you got to go from there. But I do think that you've got to invest in young players. You got to get more young players, more quality young players, which you get by trading off veterans at the deadline or adding draft picks and then turning those draft picks into players. Anders Lindback, for example, was a backup goalie who the Predators traded. They got two picks out of it. They became Pontus Aberg and Colton Sissons, who were both a part of the Cup final team. Those are the kind of trades I'm looking for. But that's not sexy to selling tickets. So to me, that's why the sellout streak ended. And I think that that's a big part of it. I do think there are some people that are, you know, anti-vaccine or whatever that don't want to go. So, okay. And I think there's that. And I think that, you know, Tuesday night, 7:30 against San Jose is just not the same. During the World Series when the Atlanta Braves are in it, I think is also another factor. The Titans might be the best team in the AFC. They have the best player maybe in the game, and they can't sell out. So I don't look at this as like a pumping of the chest of like, hey, you know, the Predators screwed up and this is great, ha ha. But I also don't look at it like it's this terrible thing that happened to the Predators. Because I don't think that's the case. I think it's the natural cycle of sports.
I don't think that that is the case at all. And I'm not in the Predators organization, but I would have to think that maybe the people in the Predators organization aren't necessarily, you know, hitting the emergency button quite yet. Yes, that's such an impressive streak, especially like you mentioned, being in a traditionally football heavy market, not a hockey market. But, and I do think that maybe some of the vaccine things come into play here, but I don't think that it's a coincidence that the first game that the Predators don't sell out happens to fall in game one of the World Series and the Atlanta Braves are in it.
By the way, speaking of that, remember all the people in April and May that were like, I'm done with baseball. I'm done. Baseball, they move the All-Star game. I'm done. I just saw Clay Travis tweet out that President Trump, who was done with baseball, is going to game four on Sunday.
Interesting.
But I thought, or Saturday, I thought everybody was done with baseball. Oh, they're not. So the people that are like vaccine, oh, I'm done. I'm, you know, you're not going to get my.
And some people might be, and that's fine. That's their prerogative.
Get to the Western Conference final, and I bet they're coming back.
Yes. Okay. I think that, you know, if it was purely a vaccine thing, if there are so many Predators fans in this city that were so against the Predators or the Bridgestone Arena's
I think
rule,
not winning,
it would have been game
I think
one
not
at
winning
Bridgestone.
Is a lot bigger than vaccines.
Yes.
As I mean, far as why they didn't sell out.
If that was the issue, it would have been the first game at home at Bridgestone was where the sellout streak would have snapped.
Done with baseball. I'm done. Major League Baseball. I'm done. Everybody was done. And now all of a sudden, everybody's enjoying Major League Baseball again. I was just shocked.
Which is good. Major League Baseball is fun. Enjoy it.
Yeah, but this was never a show that said we were giving up on baseball.
That's true.
We were never
anti-baseball.
You know what my favorite part about that all that was?
What?
So when that happened, like Fox News went on this like launch against baseball. Major League Baseball, they are woke. They are terrible. They move the All-Star game. I'm not watching. And then it was like they'd go to commercial. And it's like the All-Star game on Fox. It's like, dude, you guys. And I do wonder after like, okay, hey, you guys had 3 days of ragging on baseball. You got out of your system. And I think the Fox boss is like, all right, Joe Buck is mad. No more crapping on the All-Star game, everybody. Get back to
ready,
it.
Ready, break.
Yeah, everybody
have a good
get
show.
Back to it. 615-737-1025. We'll hit some headlines with Carolina. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman and Company play silly underdog picks today. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week for a chance to win. Go to thegamenashville.com for more details and to play silly underdog picks brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Time now for headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman and Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Headlines with Caroline, presented by Firo Tequila, the spiciest infused tequila on the market. The world belongs to the Braves.
Speaking of the Braves, the Braves' tomahawk chop gesture for some time now has kind of been a point of contention that it's offensive to the Native American community. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred is deferring to the Native American community in and around Atlanta on whether it is appropriate or not for the Braves to be encouraging the tomahawk chop gesture when the World Series goes back to Atlanta for games 3 through 5 this weekend. It's been in the news a lot recently, especially because of the Braves' success over the past couple of months. But Rob Manfred says it's important to understand that we have 30 markets around the country. They're not all the same. The Braves have done a phenomenal job with the Native American community. Native Americans around Atlanta are wholly supportive of the Braves' program, including the Tomahawk Chop. For me, that's the end of story. But the National Council of American Indians has called for the franchise to drop the chop as well as the team nickname.
So I'm just going to say this. Like, I am not a – I don't consider myself to be, like, an overly conservative person when it comes to, like, cancel culture and stuff like that. But I also don't have a problem with the name Braves. I'm not Native American, so I guess maybe my vote doesn't count. But, like, I have a problem with the name Braves. Like Redskins,
that's offensive.
Like, I have a problem with that.
Yeah,
I also have a problem with, like, people that don like full Indian or Native American wardrobes. Like, I think that's pretty over the top, and I don't like it. But I don't have a problem with the name Braves. Maybe I don't have a problem with the name Braves because I'm biased. But, like, there's not a Braves tribe. There's not a the logo really has nothing now to do with any Native American stereotypes like it used to in the past, which were, I think, probably poor. But I understand that people think it's racist, and once somebody thinks it's racist, then they're gonna. There's no way to convince them that it's not. Like when I sent out the tweet about Deshaun Watson wearing a hoodie at the national championship game and not wearing, like, you know, dressing nicer.
Yeah.
Once all those cancel culture people on Twitter, the Dan Patrick Show and everything else, were all like, oh yeah, he's racist. Like, there's nothing that I could do at that point to say, like, that was
because you
not
can
racist.
Say, hey, I'm not racist, and people will say, liar.
See, that makes
well,
you more
you
racist.
Are. Yeah.
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 But I do not find the name Braves to be racist. So I don't have a problem with it. Though I'm not sure Manfred is the one that should be speaking on this, because it seems like every time he opens his mouth on stuff like this, he ends up sticking his foot in it.
Well, he did say, when someone asked, okay, you know, the National Council of American Indians has said they don't appreciate it. Someone asked Rob Manfred, if it ever came time, would you ever reevaluate the name? And he said, ours is an everyday game. You have to sell tickets every single day to fans in that market. And there are all sorts of differences among the clubs, among the regions, as to how the game is marketed. And I know a lot of people were very enraged at the fact that Rob Manfred was putting marketing over possibly offending other people.
Yeah, I first of all think it's stupid to say that you don't market the game nationally. Most of your money comes from national teams.
If you don't market the game nationally, then that's your biggest problem right
Which
now.
Which is a problem.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of weird to say, but it's almost like Rob Manfred said something that probably a lot of people know, but people don't really say out loud, which is,
but
hey,
he said it out loud.
You know, some places feel like that's racist and some places don't. And they don't think it's racist, so it's not racist, which
Any
is basically
questions?
What he said.
Yes.
I looked at this like when the national anthem thing was a big deal in the NFL.
Yes.
And Woody Johnson, or Christopher Johnson, the brother of Woody Johnson, whoever's in charge of the Jets, came out and said, we will stand with any player who takes a knee for the national anthem. You do realize, like, Woody Johnson was such a big donor to Trump that he was the ambassador to the United Kingdom. And his brother, who's running the team while he's gone, says, we will stand with anyone who kneels. Why? Because his fan base in New York probably feels like the players should be allowed to kneel. Jed York, who owns the 49ers, we stand with the players. Jerry Jones in Texas says, if you're going to be a Cowboy, you're going to stand for the flag. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so obvious. Like,
yeah.
It's like that's why everybody else, like, stayed out of it.
Just don't say anything.
I don't know. I think Jimmy Haslam, right? Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns, I think he stayed out of it because he didn't want any part of this discussion now.
Because at that point, in a city like Cleveland that isn't necessarily one side or another definitively,
right.
You instantly, you know, ostracize 50% of your fan base, essentially.
Right. And so, I think we've already known that for a while, that people feel differently about different things across the country.
Mm-hmm.
But...
And that's okay. Maybe, people can think differently.
Maybe Manfred shouldn't have said it like that, because the way he said it was
just... It felt disingenuous.
Bad. Well, it just felt dumb.
Yeah.
It felt dumb to be like, well, racism is okay over there because that's how they feel. Like, because
that's marketing.
Don't say that. What's next?
Sticking on a Braves topic, really tough scene last night for Charlie Morton, starting pitcher for the Braves last night. Fractured his fibula in their win against the Astros last night. He was kind of walking funny, experiencing some pain in his leg after striking out two batters. I mean, which is kind of... pretty cool on its own, striking out two batters when you're experiencing a ton of pain in your leg. He underwent an initial x-ray. X-ray said everything was fine. He started throwing against a net, said he felt fine enough to continue pitching as long as he just didn't run. And then he had a sharp curveball to Jose Altuve, perfectly in the strike zone. And after that was just about it. He got another x-ray, and that did reveal a fractured right fibula. So obviously done for the season, but tough that the Braves will miss him for the rest of the World Series.
You know what was incredible to me about that last night?
What?
The fact that his adrenaline allowed him to pitch through a broken leg for the rest of the inning,
mm-hmm.
to go sit down, get back up, and pitch until finally I think the adrenaline wore off.
And it was like, okay.
And he's like, I cannot pitch on this leg.
And then walked off the field.
On a broken leg.
And struck out three guys on a broken leg.
I thought that was pretty incredible. I think the Braves win the World Series, I think this is going to be something people are going to talk about for a long time. And they should.
Mm-hmm.
But it's as far as the series is concerned, it's a major blow for the Braves.
Yeah.
What's next?
ESPN's Dan Graziano released a list of observations from Week 8 and judged whether they were overreactions or kind of fair to say. So he did have something to say about the Titans. The statement was, are the Titans Super Bowl contenders? To which he said, not an overreaction. Dan Graziano says, how could it be an overreaction after a week in which they beat the Bills and the Chiefs? Kansas City is the two-time defending AFC champion, and Buffalo opened the season as a lot of people's favorite to unseat the Chiefs. He says, one of the many things that this means is that should the Titans end up tied with either Buffalo or Kansas City for the top seed in the lone bye in the AFC playoffs, they would get that top seed by virtue of a tiebreaker. Bigger picture, though, it means that they can play with and beat anyone in the conference.
So I'm not there. I mean, like, I think the Titans should be mentioned amongst everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, you beat the Bills and the Chiefs, and I think that you should be named up there.
I think Titan fans have done a really good job of holding themselves back from talking about Super Bowl and Super Bowl contention. Now, we talk about playoffs,
yeah.
and we talk about the seedings in the AFC and how that could affect, but I don't think we've had a lot of crazy callers or a lot of crazy texters, and I know this isn't like a homer show, but I think we've really... I don't feel the sense from the fans that they're getting too far ahead of themselves, which I think is a good step in the right direction for the fans. I don't completely agree with Graziano that we can sit here and say, like, oh, yeah, Titans, Super Bowl contenders, ding. But I do think that winning those games is important.
Do you think that it is easier to say on the outside looking in? Because if there was any other team in the AFC that just beat the Bills and the Chiefs, you'd probably be afraid of them.
Sure, because they can just dump you as soon as they pick you up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, exactly. It's easy for them to say.
Those are headlines with Caroline, presented by Fiero Tequila, the spiciest infused tequila on the market. Fiero Tequila, the world belongs to the Brave. Coming up next, ESPN's NFL power rankings are out. Interesting where they have the Titans. What do we think of that? Plus, we'll get to your texts on the Titans. I know we have a lot. We will do that coming up here on Stillman and Company. FanDuel Sportsbook is my official sportsbook app. NFL Week 8 continues this Sunday, and FanDuel Sportsbook wants you to get the most out of every play. That's why they're giving everyone a $10 risk-free bet every single week. All you have to do is bet a same-game parlay bet with three legs or more, and if your bet doesn't win, FanDuel will pay you back up to $10. Big game this week, Titans and Colts, and I'd be taking a look at home team points, away team points, Wentz money line, Wentz over-under passing yards, and much more. There's no feeling like nailing a same-game parlay bet, so lock in win yours today. If you're new to FanDuel, sign up with the promo code JGM to also receive 25-1 enhanced odds on any touchdown during Sunday night between Dallas and Minnesota. You can win $125 on a $5 bet. That's promo code JGM so they know that I sent you. 21 and older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile and web. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.